This is the Independent Dealer Podcast. Education by dealers for dealers. Now, here are your hosts, Luke Godwin and Jeff Watson.
Hello and welcome to the Independent Dealer Podcast, brought to you by Buckeye Dealership Consulting. There's few things that scare me more, Luke, than acronyms, right? Like there's certain acronyms that like kind of pop up and they get you scared, you know, IRS,
CFPB,
FTC, MVED. So I was a little bit late logging on today because as I'm sitting here getting prepped for this podcast, guess who pulls up into my front?
Oh, no.
It's motor vehicle enforcement. And it's always kind of like, all right, how many are in the car? Do they have uniforms on? And he comes in and he just wanted to say hi. So if I'm a little sweaty in this, you know why that acronym has got me a little worked up today. But we have another guy on the podcast today who knows all the acronyms, Mr. Steve Levine. Thank you for joining us. How you been?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. Haven't seen you in a couple of weeks since we were at Buy Here, Pay United. So it's good to be back in touch.
Yeah, it is. Always good to see you. And I tell you, out of all the vendors in our space, if you need something, you can text or email Steve. And within like 45 minutes, Jeff, I got an answer. He keeps me out of trouble, and I like it.
I try, man.
He is. So, Steve, what we want to get into today is we want to know what is keeping you up at night, because you're kind of like the man on the watchtower, right? You're there to kind of let us know what's out there, what's happening, what's coming our way, what us as dealers need to be aware of for potential pitfalls or, you know, roadblocks or obstacles that we could fall into. So tell us, Steve, give us what is keeping you up right now?
So right now, this week, it is our Compliance Unleashed conference, which is taking place next week, May 20th, 22nd, in DFW. So, you know, the whole host of issues that come up with throwing on a conference like that, that's this week's sleepless nights.
Steve, I know how that is.
Yeah, and Steve, you've been like involved in two conferences back to back within a month. That's got to be a lot.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is our sixth year doing Compliance Unleashed. And, you know, we keep on doing it because folks keep on coming back. It gets bigger and better every year. I think we give them the information they want to hear.
That's a great point. So obviously this is a timely podcast, right? Hopefully you're listening to this on the 16th of whatever month it is, May. You've got about 3 days to get your flight booked and or your hotel and travel down to Compliance Unleashed, May 20th through the 21st at the DFW area, right? What hotel are you at?
Yeah, we're at the Embassy Suites right by DFW Airport.
Oh, easy enough.
And it's easy. Yeah, if you're in DFW, it's crazy not to come to this thing. I mean, heck, if you're in a 3-4 hour drive, it's crazy not to come to this. It is 2 days of information you don't hear anyplace else.
And I would be there, but we have a 20 group meeting next week, Jeff. And so I know you're not coming to 20 group, but I'm going to 20 group.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Bad timing with the overlap. But what are we going to hear, Steve? Why are dealers going there? What are you going to talk about? What should be on our radar and what should be keeping us up at night?
So I like to say just about every other conference you go to, it talks about putting money in the dealer's pocket. I really think we're the only conference that's all about keeping the money in your pocket and ways to protect the business and things that you need to be doing, thinking about moves you need to make to keep that money in your pocket, stay ahead of the FTC, stay ahead of the regulators, the plaintiff's lawyers. So, I mean, we have a lot of classes, everything ranging from the FTC CARS rule to what's going on at the state examination level, to what do you need to be thinking about with your own insurance policies. So we really try to give a whole range of classes, all designed, you know, you go back to the dealership the next day, you are ready to put things into action.
That's so important, because it seems like every day you look out there and a dealer is getting hit from the IRS, from the FTC, from CFPB, and plaintiff's attorneys, they're crawling all around. What is like the hot button issue right now, Steve, that dealers should say, all right, I got to slow down and figure this out?
So, yeah, at Buy Here, Pay United, I was called the scariest man in the building. because I did a presentation on the CARS rule. And we don't know when the CARS rule is going to take effect. Maybe that court case will stop it completely. But I'm advising our clients, you at least have to be aware of what the CARS rule is targeting, what kind of actions it is. Give thought to if this thing does go live in 90 days, 120 days, what are the types of things that we need to do? Because it impacts advertising, it impacts your website, it impacts what you're having your sales folks tell the customers. So there's a lot there.
Where are we right now on the CARS rule? Because the last time we spoke, I think was maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and it was about to go live, I think. And we had you on, we had Sean on, and we were kind of getting really, really worried. But then there was this court case that shut it down. Where do we stand now?
So, I'm trained to be a pessimist, but even I'm starting to get a little bit optimistic because this isn't going through the court as quickly as I had feared. That there were some briefs that were just filed by the parties. There's going to be oral arguments this summer. I don't know that the court's going to get to this much before September, maybe even October, and then we've got the election factoring into it. So I don't know where it's going to end up. I'm trying to be pragmatic with my clients and get them to realize here are the components of the rule. Here's what I want you thinking about. And if it goes into effect later this year or early next year, you're ready. If it never goes into effect, great. You need to be thinking about these things anyway, because I still think at the state level, you're going to have a lot of especially the consumer-friendly states picking up on these themes that the FTC has floated.
Yeah, it's a good point. Even if the federal government or at the federal level doesn't enact some of the local states can snag them up and kind of cobble them together in their current state laws, right, to make
Oh
things
yeah,
more headache or difficult.
I think the northeastern states and some of the other consumer-friendly states, they really like what the FTC had to say about the offering price of the vehicle and things that need to be disclosed and express informed consent. So even if this got put to bed at the federal level, I think you're going to see a bunch of states jump on those same themes.
Yeah, I don't know how those car lots do business in New Jersey, New York, California. Sorry, guys, if you're listening, I feel horrible for you.
Yeah, I think this there are not a lot of buy here, pay here dealers in those type of states because of all the consumer friendly legislation that goes on there.
What do you have to say, Luke? You can't tell me anything I
Well,
don't already know.
oh my gosh, again, you're
Let me
always
guess, this is probably an ad for BlitzPay. Because you're using
Yeah,
them to process your payments and things are going smoothly.
I mean it's that simple, right? The customer takes their money and sends it to BlitzPay, and BlitzPay sends it to me, and it all works right.
And no hidden fees, no nonsense, no double feeing you and double feeing the customer.
Yeah, that's pretty simple.
Have you been set up on their cash network yet?
I am set up. I can't answer if we're using it yet or not, but we were approved about maybe 15 days ago, and it's rolled out. And I don't think it's going to affect me much, but I know it's going to affect you because you said that's why you were ready.
Yeah, I'm excited to get set up with it and get going, and we'll report back on how it flows and as we transition all of our customers over to paying at their local Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, whatever, 7-Eleven, so I can stop taking cash in the office and just not have to stress about deposits or counting out a till or having $10,000 in cash sitting in a drawer on a Friday, right? Like I just don't even want to deal with that. So super excited. If you guys want the same thing, if you want an easy online payment platform and the cash network, call the guys over at BlitzPay. I was going to say, so with that, so if that is kind of settling down, but you talk about the consumer-friendly states and they get in a state like mine, there's not a lot of government regulation, right? Like my DMV guy came by, right? I'm not worried about him. He didn't even look for buyer's guides. He didn't even look for any of these things. Like they're really consumer friendly. But Steve, tell me the attorneys, the class action lawsuit guys, the ambulance chasers, they are not friendly no matter what state you're in. So if you think you're in a business friendly state, Texas, Arizona, Utah, whatever, South Carolina, the attorneys are not business friendly. What
Yeah,
are you seeing on
that's
that
really true.
standpoint?
Yeah, in fact, I've got a class at our conference next week. I'm really excited to do it. It's the first time I've presented on this, and it's basically about dealing with adversaries. And specifically, we have one class on dealing with adversarial regulators, and then we have a class on dealing with attorneys. And the biggest mistake that I see dealers make when they're dealing with those attorneys is they delude themselves into thinking, you know, I could call this guy, I could show him I did everything right, and I'm going to talk my way out of this. And that very rarely
We
happens.
think we're salesmen.
Yeah, that very rarely happens, and a lot of times, and I've got the scars to prove it. It does more harm than good. So I
So,
think that's gonna be a really fun class.
and I love that idea. So, what should we do, Steve, if we get that letter from the attorney, or we get an email from an attorney, or we get a summons, to appear in court? What's the first thing a dealer should do so they don't fall into this trap?
Call me.
I mean, is there any other thing we should do beside
And
that?
see, here's the thing. The first thing I tell folks is I want you to look at their email address, look at their letterhead, and I want you to look up that firm. And if you find that it's one of these firms, they're advertising medical malpractice and they're advertising car wrecks and they're advertising, divorces and wills, that's good news because they're not subject matter experts. If they're one of these firms and there's plenty out there, millions of dollars recovered for consumers, and everything about their website talks about all the successes that they've had suing creditors and credit reporting agencies and outfits like that, you've got a problem, and that case isn't going to go away easily, and you need to do your homework up front. And really, when you find one of those, that's when you need to engage somebody like me. And let me have those conversations and try to position things.
And y'all, Steve's rate is really not that expensive, and we're not getting paid to put him on here. I'm just telling you that he a couple times I've had some issues, just question issues, right? But the first thing you've got to do is understand that this is not your specialty. Your specialty is buying cars, reconning cars, and selling cars. It is not defending yourself against an attorney. A lot of times these attorneys are a lot smarter than we are, so you've got to figure out what's going on. And don't call your friend that's a divorce attorney to help you with something like this.
Yeah, but boy, I had one recently. I had a call from a prospect, and I asked him. I said, you've made a lot of decisions. I'm curious where you're getting this advice from. Well, my brother's a lawyer. Okay, what kind of law do they practice? Construction law. What the hell are they opining on these very intricate truth in lending issues? This stuff isn't easy. I've been doing this 30 years and it's not easy for me. I don't even want to think about somebody that's used to doing construction law, looking up Truth in Lending Act and trying to decipher it.
I think one of the things you say is like, just like exercise your Fifth Amendment, or whatever amendment it is, to like, don't step in it. Don't try to give them a call or provide these documents thinking that you're gonna, like you said, head it off or appease them or get them to see you were right and they were wrong. And now all of a sudden you've given them all this ammo that
Exactly.
they can use against you, right? Or you've said something or emailed or done something, trying to explain your side of it to this guy, thinking he's going to go away. Yeah, it's pretty unlikely that's going to
And
happen.
I think over the years, maybe I've gotten a little cynical, but I think that a lot of people are looking for justice. And I'm here to tell you, don't go to court looking for justice because there are so many different things that go into defining that word. And the trick is I've got to make you look good in front of a judge and a jury. And there's things that we could do ahead of time to accomplish that and really discourage the plaintiff's lawyers. But if you're not doing any of that stuff and you're just going to think you're going to pick up the phone and talk them out of that case, very hard to do.
Yikes. Steve, the other thing you mentioned just briefly earlier was another thing that's very scary, and it goes across all states. It doesn't matter what state you're in, definitely worse in some states than others, but the insurance situation, right? So what are dealers, or what can they look forward to learning, or what do they need to be aware of as far as our insurances go? Because I know, like with me, it's my liability garage keepers has like gone up 50% this year. And that's even before my audit. The audit, they're going to come back and just slap me upside the face. So it's going to be crazy. But I know everyone's open lot coverage has jumped up. Is there anything we need to know on those lines or things you're seeing from an insurance standpoint?
Yeah, so the way we designed this class at the conference, we invited Jay Williams to come speak. Dealer Risk that does a wonderful job, but I didn't just want him to put on, that kind of presentation. So I invited a couple of dealers to speak with him, and just kind of talk. What's the kind of analysis that we go through in right sizing our insurance coverage? Where are there maybe some opportunities to save money? Maybe we need a higher deductible on this. Maybe we need less coverage, and we're going to take those dollars and we're going to reapply them someplace else to where maybe we need more coverage. So it's really about right sizing your insurance for your particular business. The worst conversation I tend to have with folks is that they've gotten a demand letter, they've gotten sued, and I say, well, do you have errors and omissions coverage? Oh yeah, I do. And it turns out they don't. They just didn't understand the coverage that they were buying and what acts are covered by which policy. So it's really about getting educated. And this is why I wanted to combine Jay with those dealers and really walk through. These are dealers that have done this exercise and done this analysis and understand how to right size.
That's one thing we've talked about so many times is finding a CPA that deals in our business, right? And an attorney that deals in our business. But another very important tool in your playbook is having an insurance agent that writes a lot of dealers and understands the product they're selling, because you can buy the wrong product. I've done this before, and luckily one of my best friends is their biggest part of their business is this now. And be careful, because there are so many new insurance products that we need coverage for, like stuff with privacy, right, Steve? That's a big
Oh,
deal on
privacy, cybersecurity. Yeah, you bet.
because we have a lot of valuable information that thieves want.
Yeah, and the new FTC rule just went into effect that they updated the safeguards rule. Basically, if there's a breach incident involving 500 or more unencrypted records, business has to notify the FTC. Doesn't matter whether it's a record store or car dealer or whoever, you got to notify the FTC. And that's a pretty scary thing to do, because once you notify them that that's in the public sphere, the lawyers are going to be fishing. So it really puts you in jeopardy. But if you don't report and it's uncovered that you had a breach, I mean that's a bet the business type of risk you're taking.
Oof. Wow,
Hey.
that's scary.
Steve, and most dealers probably listening have 500 records because of the span of when you do. How do you know if you've been breached? I mean, have you seen this happen before?
Yeah, that we've worked with several folks over the years. A lot of times you may not know for a period of time. We had a client a couple of years ago. They didn't know for darn near 6 months. We had another one that they had really good IT sources, and they figured it out in a day, and they were able to nail it back. To when exactly happened, how it happened. And there was a good example of why this kind of insurance coverage is worth its weight in gold. So they found the incident on a Tuesday. By Wednesday afternoon, I'm on the phone with the insurance company. They hired a national law firm that works with cybersecurity breaches. They had forensic experts on the ground deciphering this thing.
Jeez.
And, it's not cheap coverage, but I mean, in that example, it was a big business operated in several states. That's the kind of thing that really could have eaten them for lunch.
And so are they housing their own data in their own servers, or is this a breach? Like, if one of my third-party software providers that I put all my customers' data into, if they get breached, they tell me, and then I have to tell the FTC that that
Well,
happened.
correct. But in this case, yes, they actually did house their own data because they actually thought we've got a really robust IT team. We're better off keeping it ourselves than giving it to a third party. provider. So they made that decision, and that they wound up that literally it came down to they had one hole in their infrastructure.
Oh, geez. You know, we thought about that just the other day. We had an automatic renewal come up on one of our software, antivirus softwares. And it's like, oh, crap. Oh, yeah, we've got antivirus software. Like, completely forgot because I don't have an IT team. I'm not big enough. I am the IT team, right? But it's like those reminders of like, hey, do you have login passwords on all your computers? Have you set up two-factor on all your software at third-party providers? Do you have a malware or some sort of antivirus that isn't just the free version, but is actually like you have it on every computer and every device that's accessing those same records or anywhere you're keeping people's scanned driver's licenses, right? I think those things get so far away from us because we don't put in like, hey, every 12 months or every 6 months, I need to go check every single computer and make sure no one's disabled the antivirus, right? It's all
And
those little teeny
one of
things.
the big mistakes that I see made is, the dealer doesn't want to buy a lot of licenses. So okay, let's take our whole admin department and put them on one username and password. So
Right. So
you got,
everybody's logging into the same thing.
yeah,
Yeah.
and you number one, there's no audit trail if you do that, and then when somebody leaves, you're really at risk. That happened to somebody I know about recently. So somebody I know of had an employee leave, and all of a sudden the IT department noticed a lot of traffic at 2 in the morning, and that tipped them off that there was something going on.
Oh, geez. I audited my DMS the other day and looked in there and saw that there was still an old employee that had an active login that never got deleted for some reason when they left. And of course, gratefully, they left under good circumstances. But I was like, wow, man, this is who's in charge of this? Oh, I am. Right. Duh. Like I was supposed to delete their logins when they got let go.
And I think that's really a good thing to talk about real quick, Steve, because whenever someone quits or fired, if they fire, they get all I take all the logins down immediately. What's the best what's the best way to handle this when employees leave?
So you should have a written separation policy. And anytime somebody leaves, you just go through the steps. Here's what they have access to. Not everybody has access to all the systems. So for every employee, you should have a list of what they have access to. We're going to turn them off. Do they have a company cell phone? Do they have a company laptop, iPad, anything like that? Well, we're going to make sure we have the technology accounted for. We're going to make sure if it's somebody in sales that has their own Facebook page and they're promoting the company, you've got to take certain steps there. And then let me go off in a little bit different direction, but I really want to mention it. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the FTC announced the ban on non-compete agreements. And again, that's being challenged in court as well. Personally, I think that challenge should win. I think they are way overreaching. But what I want to tell people is right now, with that out there, your confidentiality and your non-disclosure agreements are very important, and you really need to be considering them. And for years, I've been telling folks, I think it is a best practice when somebody leaves your company, remind them what they signed. Hopefully you're having folks sign confidentiality agreements and non-solicitation or non-disparagement type agreements. You don't have to intimidate them. You don't have to browbeat them with it. But just want to remind you, when we hired you, you signed these things, and these obligations are still effective, and we expect you to honor them. And with non-compete agreements being up in the air, most of the issues that car dealers have isn't going to be they're violating the non-compete. It's going to be they're trying to take your client list. They're trying to solicit. They're trying to do things like that. So you just have to remind them that there's a prohibition against that. And if you're not doing those things, you really need to be. You don't have to have an employment agreement with everybody, but you should be having everybody sign a non-compete, a non non-disclosure agreement, confidentiality agreement, non-solicitation agreement.
Yeah, I mean we have a employment agreement or contract that as you remind me of these things, I create a new paragraph or a new agreement in that. And it's just a continual running document. And I add a new paragraph every 6 months of something like this that I have every employee sign when they come in, right? We talk about, you know, leave time, and we talk about appearance, and we talk about appropriate language, like all those policies that you should have in your policy and procedure manual. Correct. You know, condense it down into one document that I think is important to have everyone sign, from your upper management all the way down to your detailer and your lot tech, right?
Yeah,
because even some of these guys, they can't get access to systems, and they just can't say, well, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to, you know, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to tell your pricing to the next guy that I go to, or the ins and outs of your vendors, or where these cars are showing up from. Like, yeah, I mean, on the other side, good luck ever enforcing that. But yeah, it's good to have it there.
But I think what Steve was talking about is it's good to remind them. And that the possibility of you trying to enforce it would probably deter a lot of people from doing those type things. Yo, Jeff, it's, you know, we talk about this all the time, and we continue to preach it. And it's reinsurance, reinsurance, reinsurance. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. He's that's in the business of roofing, and we were talking about he was talking about starting to build a couple of houses and this, that, and other. And I was saying, you know, you've got to make sure that you do insulate yourself in your business and have more businesses. And reinsurance is a huge part of that. It's your warranty. It's your gap if you want to do that. It's your service contracts if you want to do that. Then you can take and CPI as its own business. So you can kind of vertically integrate within your business by adding reinsurance. It makes you have four or five businesses under one rooftop.
Yeah, it is. And it's additional, you know, you were saying that, and I jumped on to look, I'm up to a 25% penetration on my CPI. So
yeah,
if I collect all that, that's an additional $12,000 a month, right? In money that was going to Geico, Progressive, Allstate, somewhere else, and now is coming to me, and I get to control whether or not those cars get fixed, right? I get to control whether or not we put a bumper or a door, or handle a total loss and salvage it or scrap it, right? So that can really build up. I mean, you take that money, times it by 12, that's pretty great little side number. So anyways, call the guys at Buckeye, get your reinsurance company set up today. You won't regret it. Steve, what's interesting, when we talked about this in previous episodes, is all this stuff that we do is not, it's not always ironclad, right? Just because you have a great attorney and a great policies and you have everyone sign everything and dot the I's and cross the T's doesn't mean that something still might not happen, right? You may still get the knock on the door from an attorney or an FTC person, but what you're doing is you're bringing that risk, right? You're bringing the potential for exposure down to the minimal level. So even if you did get investigated, or you got, you know, subpoenaed or something from a CFPB or an FTC, you can go in and say, look, we tried every reasonable effort to comply with the law. And does that save us anything? I mean, is that kind of the goal, to make sure that we're doing the best we can, so that when we do get kind of attacked or looked at, they at least see that we did our best?
And I think that does matter. And, you know, you've heard me talk about it before, but back when I was trying cases, doing litigation, a lot of times I didn't have any story to tell. The dealer didn't do anything. And, you know, the plaintiff's lawyer is just flailing away, calling them every name in a book, you know, bringing up all those stereotypes, and I've got nothing. So I really consider my job, because I don't do litigation anymore, my job is to put my clients in a position where if you do get attacked, you've got a great story to tell. We do have written policies. We do have training. We do document reviews. We take all these steps to try to do business the right way. And if we missed, it is the result of an unfortunate error. People make mistakes, but it is not a widespread catastrophe because of all these things we do.
That's a good point. When you talk about that, it's like, it's the firewalls, you know, it's like the submarine being compartmentalized. Like, if we have a breach somewhere, we have enough layers and policies and procedures that it's not systemic. This isn't going to go from one account where we missed a document to 500 accounts where we missed a document, and now we get fined on every single one of them, right?
I like to say, you know, the old joke about I don't have to be faster than the bear, I just have to be faster than you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to be perfect. You just have to do enough to discourage the regulator, the plaintiff's lawyer. They're going to go for the easy target. You know, the guy next door, they're not going to mess with you because they look at yourself, man, that's going to be work. They really are trying to do it right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if they don't see that it can be turned into a class action, they'll probably go sniffing up some other tree, right?
Yeah.
If it's just a one-off.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what we're seeing a lot now, that there's a couple of law firms around the country that are trying to take your post-repossession letters, your deficiency balance letters, trying to turn those into class action cases. Because the letters don't read right. I see a lot of issues with that area. And and then with credit reporting and dispute handling. And those are very tough cases. Once they're brought, it's really hard to get out of them cheap and easy because the lawyers are just playing the lottery at that point.
Yeah, because the damages are just exponential. They could be anything. You damaged his credit, which caused XYZ numbers and all this impact
to the
consumer.
And what they're looking for, they're saying, okay, you had a systematic inconsistency. So every customer of yours that falls into this fact pattern is a potential member of a class.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it gets real expensive. So one of the things that I really preach is do some sort of MIDI credit reporting audit. It doesn't have to be the whole kitchen sink. But, you know, even if you're a small guy, grab 30, 50 accounts and look and make sure that things are working as they're intended to, because there's a lot of miscommunications that happen. A lot of times the dealer, the finance company, you're depending on your technology resources to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So every once in a while, you have to check and make sure that it's being done correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we went through that last year with you, and I guess it's something we probably need to do every year just to audit our process when it comes to credit reporting, because that is one a rabbit hole I don't want to go down and get in trouble with. Steve, if I still have time to get to your to Compliance Unleashed, what else are we going to learn there? What other type of things we're going to learn to keep the money in our pocket?
So I'm really excited. I'm teaching a class. It's what I would do if I owned the dealership. And it really talks about the moves I would make if I was an owner, you know, day one. Would I let myself be the compliance officer? You know, how often would I do a doc review? What policies are important? Do I want to use an arbitration agreement? Do I want to report credit? You know, so it's that kind of analysis, you know, from the eyes of somebody that's been doing this a long time and knows where people get attacked. So I think that's going to be a really fun one. And we've just got a whole bunch of great classes. We felt it important this year to do a class on e-contracting and e-signature, because I see a lot of folks confused by those two things.
Yeah.
So we're having the folks at Secure Close actually teaching the class with us on that. So, you know, a lot of what we do is based on what we hear from our clients and what we see going on out there. I mean, it really takes us about 6 months to put together our agenda.
That's you know, one of the first reasons I ever reached out to you was e-contracting and e-signature, and that was very enlightening to know the difference between the two and what some vendors out there might be telling you compared to what is actually going on. So, and that's definitely going to be something that continues to come up as our business gets more remote and more virtual. That's something every dealer needs to know.
Steve, will these sessions be recorded? Will there be opportunities for people to listen to these or learn from these if they can't make it there?
Well, we actually don't record them. We try to keep the cost of the conference reasonable. Mm-hmm. And when you layer in recording, it just gets so expensive. But we're doing something this year we're really excited about. We've partnered with a couple of the AIEDAs, and we're actually doing Compliance Unleashed South during the Florida FIADA meeting in October, and then Marietta in September, what we're doing Compliance Unleashed North. And those are going to be like 3-hour workshops where we take our content and condense them into like 30-minute classes, just a hit list of issues. So if you're not able to make it out to Texas next week for our event, you've got other chances at either of those.
That's awesome.
Very
And
nice.
in addition to that, people can get a hold of you or learn from your stuff. Where else?
So I think the best thing that you could do to keep up to speed with what we think is important, just send us an email at info@ignitecp.com and tell us you want to be on our email list. Every week we put out a tip of the week, some other crucial issue that's going on. No obligation, it's free. We do monthly webinars, no obligation, they're free. If you get on our list and get access to that content, we've got some clients. They have their entire company getting our tip of the week. They have their whole management team sit in on our monthly webinars. And it's just a good way to get really fresh information every month.
That's a good point. I don't want to get back into this too far, but you've got to get the information and then you've got to disseminate that to your team. And I think a lot of dealers forget that. They go to convention or they get the email and they learn it, but they never teach it to the people who are actually on the front line handling that information or doing that process, right? So it's important to get all of your team signed up for these things and make sure they're reading it and being involved at every single level. So it doesn't just stop with you and never actually get to where the rubber meets the road.
That's right. And I know we're being successful when I start getting emails from, just rank and file collectors or rank and file admin folks. Just, hey, I was on your webinar and I heard this and I've got a question. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we're permeating and we're getting the information out there.
Steve, hey. Appreciate your time so much. Hopefully everyone's jumped online and got registered, and they'll see you in a couple of days down there in Dallas.
We are super excited to do this. Like I said, every year it just keeps on getting bigger and better. Appreciate the support that the independent dealer gives to us. It's always great talking to you guys.
Thank you for listening. Please leave us a review. We'll catch you in the next episode.
Cool. Awesome, man.
God, you guys make it so easy.
Have you been on podcasts that aren't easy?
Yes.